Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm on SFB Online, Bedcom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for a talkcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either dial on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com and search for call ID 17702. Our SFU On Call, our Starfleet Universe On Call, you will find us there. Or, if you want the best online experience, just go to twitch.tv, yes, twitch.tv/SFU On Call, and you will find us there. Be able to join our wonderful chat room and chat with the people there. And, obviously, I'm also paying attention to it so that you can chat with me. Kind of in that way. And, of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter /X/whatever it is this week. My podcasting account is sfuoncall. Also, you want to follow my personal account. It's Paul Franz, P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. That's out note. There is no T in that. And also, my business account, which is Franz Games. FRANZGMES. I'll have those accounts until Twitter dies. If it does, don't know. But anyway, and of course, this lovely talkcast gets into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from AB this week. There's no news. My understanding is that Steve Petrick is still working on the Orion's Master Starship book. And there goes my local Zinni, for those of you on the video. And found on the online store for this week is the Starfleet Marines Assault. That is the actual Starfleet Marines game that's $34.95. It's a ground combat. Comes to Starfleet Universe. Your squad of Marines, combat engineers, commandos, heavy weapons, snipers, and militia fire to stun the enemy and maneuver for close assault. Includes rules for infantry, armor, transporter, artillery. That sounds like nasty. That sounds really nasty. Sky cavalry, i.e. shuttlecraft, and landed by transporter, bunkers, and battle position, and civilians. There's 8 scenarios included, including the Battle of the Zindi Farm and also Zombie Apocalypse. There is a beautiful full-color map, 22 by 25.5 inches, which was designed by Xander Fulton. For those of you who have been in the SFB community, you'll recognize that name. And also, there's only 10 pages of rules, so it's a very small rule book. And also, there's 14 pages of scenarios. More scenario pages than rules. Sounds good deal to me. And that's scenarios, charts, notes, and so forth. And also, there's a 560 die cut counters in that deal. So if you like counters, and hey, it's another way of getting more counters. Moving on and forward to the SFB Online tournament, the Sapphire 16 tournament. We have a few games already completed and a couple of games actually started. One of those games is my own game. Got together with Jeff Clark on Monday to play a couple hours. Was it Monday? Yeah, it was Monday. And then I had to run out the door and go to my archery club meeting. We got done 2 turns. At the moment, I've got a bit of shield damage. He's got a bit of shield damage. I got more than he does. And I had to stop because he launched a bunch of torpedoes at me, and I had no place to go. I was cornered. So we're going to hopefully get together. I'm hoping Sunday. If not, then it's probably going to be Tuesday, because Monday I am going to be busy on Monday night. Moving onward and forward to library report. There's been no more updates since last week. I did do multiple updates when it comes to the SAB library from Matt and from Frank. So they fixed quite a few ships. I still have to help Frank with getting access to the web to the server again, too, so he can download some of the SSDs so he can work on them and correct them. Also, there's been no updates to the FedCom library, and so with that is the news for this week. Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, and you're not. It's been a while. Yes. Thanks, Doug. Obviously, we have the one, Doug Howard. He actually made it. I was concerned that I did not hear anything from you this day.
I'm here.
Yep, I can
I'm
tell.
right here.
Yes,
I'm here.
I hear you. Give me a sec. But also, we have Barry. Say hi, Barry.
There. Hello. Hello.
Hello. And Jeff, our local truck
Good evening,
driver.
everybody.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Start off with this is
Yeah.
I will for those of the audience who not was not here for the preamble to this lovely show, what we're gonna I'm just gonna describe something that happened this past week, which is, of course, those who've been paying attention, or I'm not sure if it's been announced, which was my game against Jeff Clark. He lives in Japan. So he was playing early morning Tuesday, like 7 o'clock, 7 a.m. Tuesday morning, while I was playing when we started at 5 o'clock my time, p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we got a bit of a time difference. He's crossed the national, the international dateline. So anyhow, we just got through two turns. It's pretty uneventful. We approached one another. He launched two plasma S's. Plasma S's at me, and I figured, okay, well, we're playing the guessing game, which is how many of these are pseudo? Is he a person to launch both just to get me to turn and therefore, actually keep all of his weapons available for me to the fire? Or is he one of those people that's going to say, I want to guarantee that he's going to turn, so he has at least one that's real. Or there is, of course, the last but not least option, which is, of course, both of them are real, in which case he's going for, oh, I bet he's going to think that these are both pseudo or one pseudo, and I'm really going to give him a surprise. Well, he went for the middle option. So he did that, and of course, I turned away. I fired a couple, one phaser G at the real one, and two phaser ones at the fake one. And so I got hit for bum, 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 like 8 points of damage, because it was near the end of the turn. So no big deal there. I ran, and finally on turn two, I ended up in the corner, which then he launched a real S and real F at me. So I got 50 points, and I went, okay, I need to wild weasel, wild weaseled. I caught him off guard, because he didn't realize that basically you go, you announce your ED on one impulse, next impulse goes around, obviously you stop immediately. No, actually don't go stop me, stop two impulses. You go around once, go around the second time, you stop at the end of movement of the second impulse. And therefore, you can launch, since it's during right after movement of the second impulse, after the second impulse, you could then launch the Wild Weasel after the second impulse. This is one of those few times ever in SFB rules that so an action that takes two impulses doesn't take two impulses, two full impulses from the point of that segment, in the impulse segment. Because normally it goes around, you know, like when you're acting fire control, it doesn't come up until you get past active fire control, you know, to that point in the segment. But with ED, it's the action completes before that time, right after movement. So when the segment part where you can launch shuttles comes around, then I can launch my Wild Weasel. Just two impulses afterwards. And I think I caught him off guard with that, because he planned on firing at me that second impulse. And then I launched my Wild Weasel and he went, oops. he didn't fire at me because of the plus two shift. And that was at like range four. So I was able to stop him from actually firing at me. He still fired at me. In fact, he even launched a plasma F at me. And fortunately, I had some reserve power available to me. So with my that allowed me to attack and have it so that the plasma didn't hit me on my weakest shield. So I was able to knock it down. I used one of my phaser Gs and two phaser ones on the plasma F. And so I got like, I think it was 6 points of damage against the shield. So not bad. You know, nobody's shields are penetrated. I actually fired my disruptors, standard disruptors, at him at like range 10. On turn one, on his shield number three, because I figured that probably best, you know, I aim for his rear shields. So I've got some damage on his shields. He's got some damage on mine. You know, he has now only one plasma, which he's in the middle of recharging, because we're at the end of turn two. He's used up all his real plasmas. In two turns, he's used up every single real plasma he has. And, well, of course, I'm dead. I'm dead in space. My ED announced on impulse 22, I think it is. Yeah, 22. So I got the first six impulses. I can't move. I'm stuck right in that spot.
Right.
And then I'm going to, obviously, I'm going to have speed 10 really fast, you know, so I can get going and get moving. I'm assuming he's probably going to run for the far corner as he's recharging his plasma. Because if I was him, I'd use a lot of power and speed to get as far as possible so that when he needs that final turn of arming, or on turn four, for at least for the first plasma, he'll have the power without having to worry about it. Now, well, I know he might just decide on doing rolling S. I kind of doubt that at this moment, but he might, you know, he might actually go for rolling S and then do an enveloper later on, you know, don't know. I have to wait and see, you know. This is all my guessing, given that we're only on the second turn of the game, and I don't know what he has planned for turn three. As I said, obviously he's going to run away. The question is what's the kind of speed he's going to be using. Obviously, one thing he will be doing is he will be recharging his batteries, refilling his phaser capacitors, so that he'll be all prepared. And, of course, I will basically be doing the same just because I can't move that fast. So.
Right, right. Yeah, lots of power and nothing to do with it.
Exactly. So I probably won't be doing that, which is, I'm not going to be doing a lot of reinforcement because I do not expect him to come in and attack. If he comes into attack with
What is the current range?
The current range is around range. I gotta check. I think it's 5 or 6.
When do your phasers recycle?
My phasers recycle. All of them are recycled by like Impulse 4.
Impulse 4, you might be able to get a range 8 shot with all your phaser 1s. Or you could blast them with disruptors too.
Mm-hmm.
Hit them with overloaded disruptors and phaser 1s. If he's trying to run.
True. I always, that's one of the things you always have to be careful about in my mind, is because of, obviously he's going to be definitely recharging his phasers, would be my guess, and also his plasma. And if I do that, there's nothing that's going to stop him from coming in on me.
Other than the fact that he won't have his plasmas back up. And if he comes in and runs it into you, you still have your gap, who's not inconsiderate, and it leaves him very close to you on the following turn, and he still doesn't have his plasmas.
True.
He needs to spend this turn running. He has no choice.
That is true.
You can take that parting shot at him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll definitely consider that in my
and
plan.
If he does decide to run, he does decide to run in on you, he's just giving you the game.
Understood. But anyway,
it also means that on turn 4, if he does run in on you, you're at close range, and your phasers will have recycled.
True.
You might put a few points into tractor, just because if he decides to run in on you, and you grab him with a tractor, then on turn 4, you've got him point blank range. He doesn't have his plasmas, and you have your ESGs too.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's another reason for him not to come in towards me. But I haven't even used them yet.
He can't. Yeah, he can't run in on you.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to use them, just for the plain simple reason that, I need to use Wild Weasel to save my butt.
Yeah.
So. Online portal, on to the next topic. Next topic. For those of you who have been following along for the past few weeks, we're going through the Space Monsters of SFB. This week, we start with Sunsnake. Sunsnake is kind of nasty little guy because of, I'm reading through the rules, and I'll bring them up real quick. And that is, the Sunsnake moves at a speed of 3 hexes per turn, so he's a slow sucker. And will always move directly toward the star as a seeking weapon. However, anytime the starship is within 5 hexes of the Sunsnake will strike the starship, spitting plasmatic venom. Sunsnake executes the attack without moving, using the attack table. there is no range on this, so 1 to 6. 1 is 30 points of damage. Down if you roll a 6, it's 5 points of damage. So nasty little thing. But the snake will make 1 such attack per turn against each starship or PF. But it can attack any number of targets in a turn. So it only can attack a single target once a turn. Now, the one thing that you would notice by those rules, unlike some monsters, the Sun Snake does not get distracted. It's going for that sun. So there's two choices in the matter when it comes to defeating the Sun Snake. Oh, sorry, not defeating the Sun Snake. Victory. Number one is you might have, first thing you have to do is you have to use the normal procedure for G4.1, which is that you have to gain, in this case, 400 points of information, and then you have to roll the die roll on the six, sorry, S6.1 chart to determine how to destroy it or how to defeat it. I say that because of if you roll the six, okay, it says, however, a roll of six, the result of six is changed to read the monster cannot be destroyed by forces at your disposal, which means that you're toast. Now, there is an unarmed research station which occupies 20 crew units. Now, the whole idea is that you need to save these people. And you can use transporters or shuttles. Now, the bad thing about the, of course, Sun Snake is that it doesn't get distracted like some other monsters. The good thing is that the Sun Snake, unless you're within 5 hexes of the Sun Snake, it won't attack you. Even if you're within 5 hexes, okay, he attacks you once. After he attacks you the once, you know he won't attack you again that turn. So if you need to, and you're close to the planet, you can use the transporters to transport the crew units on to the ship, the researchers that are in at that research station. Victory conditions that, if the ship is destroyed, the player loses it, obviously. If I love you, goodbye. Sorry, the locals in these. If the snake is destroyed before reaching the star, well, the player wins. Duh. Nike Gilly's clean-cut condition to success is determined by the evacuation of the scientists' information gained about the monster. Each point of information is 1 point of victory. Each crew unit evacuated is on the planet is worth 10 points towards victory. So if you get all 20 crew units, that's 200 points. If you just do that without getting any other information about the Sun Snake, then the captain is considered disappointing and will retire within a year, barring some notable success. So he's got a certain level of success. He's not considered a complete and utter failure. But to be really, if your next level, which is if you actually gain some information, which is at least some information, and you get all the crew units, then the captain is, that's 201 to 300 points. The captain is considered to have done his best in a difficult situation, neither condemned nor commended. So basically, it's the glass half full, glass half empty kind of thing. He will continue to command at least until the end of his assigned tour. Now, then after that, then you get higher and higher. Up to 399 point, the captain is considered to have salvaged some success from a situation considered hopeless. He may be granted extended command tour or offered command of a better ship. 400 points is considered to be given to be daring and bold in the face of an unprecedented adversity. Given command of a small fleet, is placed in charge of the Sun Snake Menace Committee. And it says the numbers and parameters are used for the U2.0. That's the thing, it's the captain's campaign that the monster is substituted for another in that campaign. So I can't imagine using that for the frigate captain's game. But so obviously the one thing you want to do is the Where is it? Da, 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 da. Tactics that it suggests is that early part of the game spend at least two turns within transportation range of the planet, evacuate as many crew units as there is possible. This will save a few points if the thing gets closer to the star. Run for the planet, rescue the Q unit, the crew. Note that the base does not have any shuttles or transporters, so you will not be able to use D-21 to evacuate the base faster, but you can use if there is not an enemy ship around, make it difficult. This is G-2, 32, G-832. I'm not sure what that is. I'd have to look that up. But in any case,
Shuttle.
a shuttle, yeah, okay. So it's suggesting that just to get the points, start evacuating the crew units as the first priority. The planet is at 0805, and you start at 2330. So you start across the map, not completely across the map, but across the map from it. So it will take you two turns to get to the planet. Then at that point, it's suggesting run, top speed for the planet, and then at that point, run for the Sun Snake, which is 4222. So, in theory, if you which makes sense, to get those points, obviously you need to destroy the Sun Snake because there's no friendly option, i.e., rolls alt six on the S6.1 chart. And wow. I tend to agree with the tactics suggested. The only issue is obviously for me is that you can be. If you go directly for the Sun Snake, you get an additional turn right there with the Sun Snake. Now this depends obviously on the number of labs. If you have a Fed, Feds have a way of just killing it when it comes to monsters. That's because of the Feds have a lot of labs and monster scenarios. I swear they're designed for Feds in mind, just because of the whole gain information, like in this case 400 points, and then using chart number six, S6.1 to find a result. Give me.
The old series wasn't exactly the Klingon show, so to speak.
Yeah, Klingons makes it a little harder because a D7
Even
has like four labs.
based off the old series.
Yeah.
And the Franz Josef design books and stuff. So, I mean, it kind of makes some sense. It's just a matter of they designed all those other ships that way.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Right. And you have to, and I'm looking at the scientific chart, and of course the tough part about the chart is that you're not guaranteed lab points until you're like at least range four. So, there is that minor issue that if you roll really poorly when it comes to the Sun Snake attacking you, the Sun Snake could do 30 points of damage every single turn.
Sounds good to me.
Now, the one thing that I did not see, let me look at this for a moment. My assumption here, and I don't see it mentioned, but I'll have to assume. Which is when the Sun Snake executes its attack, It's a it is since it's spitting plasmatic venom, it's a direct fire weapon, which means that from the Sun Snake to the ship, the shield that hits, because there's nothing this is not like the moray eel, where the moray eel bites the ship and actually ignores the shield. This one doesn't ignore the shield, so in theory, if you can have it so they can hit two different shields, but still, if you roll 50%, you have a 50% roll that you'll get between 20 and 30. You know, when it comes to him attacking you, so you can't do that too many times. Get within range 5. Which, of course, the funny part for me is that means. Okay, anytime the ship starts within 5 hexes, to me, what that means is that, okay, the starts within 5 hexes, which means as soon as the ship is within 5 hexes, it means 5 hexes or 4 hexes, there's two possibilities, because you can jump from 6 to 4 or just get to range 5. He'll attack you that one time. So it can be that can be definitely problematic because of that. They're talking about CA, so there's a good possibility that you'll have like half your shield will be gone at the very least, because if you roll 1 through 4, that's 30 at range 1, roll 1, 15 at range 4, which means half your shield is gone. The roll of 4. And of course, this gets worse as it gets, if you roll a better die roll. And to the point where you're going to be taking, definitely, this is a scenario which you will take damage to your ship. It's impossible. Absolutely impossible to go through the scenario without actually inflicting damage on your ship.
Yeah.
Because that's
yeah.
Yep. Go ahead out.
Yeah, it's getting late, and I'm gonna need to head out.
Okay.
All right.
Hey Jeff, I see that you probably dropped and came back.
Well, what I was going to say was, as long as the Sun Snake is vulnerable to electronic warfare, keeping a 2-shift on the beast is survival.
You got a good point there, because that's one thing. Obviously, with playing a lot of tournament games, we usually don't deal with EW. My assumption, because it doesn't say that it's not, my assumption is that yes, it would be affected by EW.
Might want to look that up under monsters in general.
Yeah, because most of the monsters, most of the really quote unquote fun monsters, generally have some defense against EW to some degree or another. It's one of those systems that is. If you're not,
yeah, this is the way it works. Yeah. After this one, I did not look at, which was obviously, as we all know, if you know anything about Peravian history and all, if a Sun Snake enters your star, the star goes supernova. It goes nova. And there's actually P12 is the rules for if a star goes nova. My guess, I've not read the rules. I'm guessing that the star expands until it takes over the planet, which gets the planet that is destroyed at that point when the star expands out to the planet. I just don't know how quickly that the star expands.
Oh, it's usually said in the thing. It's usually given in a, there is a rule for that. I don't remember the number because, hey, look, I don't have the same.
Oh, jeez.
But it's like one hex per turn, I think. As a standing line.
Hey, Russ.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Honestly, Dave, I don't know. Dave mentioned on in the chat room, please join us at twitch.tv/SFUOnCall and join the chat room. Dave is just mentioning, what does an Andromeda do if the monster can only be destroyed by a suicide shuttle? I thought there was a special Andromeda chart somewhere. That is possible. I will have to check on that. There's got to be a special rule for the Andromedas, because otherwise, basically, it's like a roll six. You know, that gives, there's a 1 in 6 chance that the Andromeda cannot destroy it, which I think would be completely and utterly unfair to say, oh, you have to use a shuttle. Well, we don't have a shuttle.
That was a robot. It shouldn't hurt their feelings, right?
Yeah, well, I'm just wondering what would be a replacement for it.
I think there's a replacement result for that.
Yeah. It's possible they might just say, well, if it's that roll, just re-roll. Because that's what I would do, personally. If there is no rule for special rule for Andromedans, I'd say, well, if it rolls for a suicide shuttle, I'd go, okay, no, I can't do that. Re-roll. That'd be, to me, the only fair thing to do.
Yeah. It's one of those judgment calls, really.
Right.
And the thing is that if you look into the deeper monster rules in, I think, the expert or the advanced book set, it talks about certain situations by which you can actually find yourself with an impossible solution. Like one of the things it talks about is if you've done less than, what is it, 50 points of damage to the monster, mm-hmm. it's still possible to win the scenario. But if you've done more than 50, then if you roll that particular thing, well, then you're screwed. And there's other little tidbits and gotchas in there. Did you use all your shuttles up for laboratory purposes and have them shot down by mids? Then yeah, there's not, you can't build a suicide shuttle to ram down the thing's throat. It was that vaporous risk reward equation that was designed into the way these monsters work.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah, the one with the shuttle. Yeah, huh? Well, that, see, the thing is, that one's on your own, in my mind. Is if you use up all your shuttles and you roll, you have to get killed with a suicide shuttle. You're screwed, and you screwed yourself. It's not that you don't have them available to the ship; it's that you used them up.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's on the player.
Now,
that is a tactical consideration you have from the beginning, is to save one shuttle.
Right, exactly. Well, and of course, then you have to be careful in the case of a Sun Snake if he happens to get through your shield, you know, because as you pointed out, I don't see that it's not affected by EW. And that is, you know, internals. And obviously, if you get too many internals, you can lose all your shuttle bays in case you're screwed. But again, that's something that you can, in theory, avoid. You know?
Yep.
So it's
like you save your last shuttle and you save your last probe, because you might need both.
Exactly.
But yeah.
Yeah, I have to reread the rules for probes. I know you can charge them for regular, you know, as probe usage, and you've got 5 of them, and you can use, and you basically, their additional lab, which I think
it works about like this. They take 2 points of power to charge over 2 turns, just like a photon torpedo. If it's launched for informational gathering purposes, it doesn't have a firing arc. It just has a range.
Right.
And I think there's a range component to it. But basically, if you're within the range component and you fire, it's 20 points of information gathered. if you use it as an ad hoc weapon, either because you're a crippled ship, you've got a legendary captain, or in a monster scenario, it arms like a photon torpedo, has a centerline firing arc, and you basically have to roll the ranger less.
There it is.
Or, excuse me, not the ranger less.
No.
It's the inverse, but it's basically you get one shot in six to hit at range six.
Mm-hmm. Okay, within range six of the hex, at least the probe, the fire moves immediately to any hex, which is within six hexes of the launching ship, in the same hex as adjacent, and Slice then produces 20 points of information, yeah. About the object.
Yeah, I looked it up recently when we were doing the Captain's Log 55 Battle Force 550 fleet, when I realized I was screwed.
Yeah, that's the one thing I really am looking forward to, because for the double nickel, if it ever gets published. But it's been a while. Come on, let's be honest here. And because of it, it'd be one of the few articles that I actually submit. I'm a part of in a Captain's Log, which is not related to SFP Online or FedCom Online or Starfleet Warlord. That's usually what the articles are related to me are those three things. So, what? Okay. Moving onward and forward. Yes, Kitty. We're going to move onward.
Man, Kazan wars continue.
Yes. What? You spoil a little thing? He's being very cute. Now, if he was up here, he'd be cuter than anything else, and I'm sure everyone else would go, oh, cute. This is okay. Thank you. Okay, excuse me. Russ sent me some monster PDFs and he did it and notes. D6. He created, okay. D6.397. EW. EW has no effect on monsters.
Yeah,
thank you.
I figured that was too easy.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Rush, for pointing that out. So, EW, nothing. So you're screwed.
Oh, well.
Playing.
Blame the guy for trying.
Power on it. Think of that as a plus. Yeah.
Yikes. Now, now moving on forward, we got the next monster, which is the mind monster, the one who can blank your mind. Yeah, not a fun one. So now we're going to turn everyone into zombies. Actually, no. Let's not start. Let's just not go there. Let's just let that go.
It was a cheap shot. It wasn't anything more than that.
I know. But remember, this is a year that when it comes to, it's very, very, very political heavy, because we're going to be electing the president this year. Therefore, a lot of politics are ramped up. Just because of that, even though obviously we do elections every single year, and at least every 2 years we do representatives. You know, whether it is your congressman or your senator, or possibly both. But anyway, let's not start that, because I'm not happy. about certain things that have been happening in the Congress and then
politics.
So
I'll think about.
Moving onward.
Topic at hand.
Back to non-reality.
Yes, something that's a little more pleasant to talk about. Now, the good part about this is that the monster only moves speed 6 and has a turn mode. So it has a turn mode of 1. So it actually has to move forward 1 before it actually can turn. What a, you know, that's always good. So it's not like the moray eel, who has a turn mode of 0. And if it attacks you, it merely goes right at you, no matter what direction it was heading previously. But anyway.
Yeah, but give it credit, Moray is a pretty quick little bastard.
Yeah.
And maneuverable.
Okay. Moray eel in space. Okay, anyway. If a ship is within 2x of the monster and moving slower than 6, because it has to move really slow, the monster will then follow the ship, but it will never move further away from the planet. So if you try to distract it from the planet, it won't really distract it from the planet. It might do a minor bit of distraction, but it will not go farther away from the planet. It will only... You only have it so that it doesn't get closer. That's about the best you can do. If the monster gets any closer to the ship, if it cannot get closer to the ship due to this restriction, it will ignore the ship and move towards the planet. So basically, if you move away from the planet, it will go, screw you, I'm going to go for the planet. So that's obviously something to keep in mind. Of course, then there's the minor nastiness, which is excuse me. Yes, there's something I can help you. You gonna stay there? Yes, he's being very cute.
Attention and pets is required.
Ay, ay, ay. Yes, I love you, but you can be a pain. Okay, the monster will attack any manned unit that comes within 5 hexes. It can attack any number of times each turn, but only attack each unit once per turn. So again, it's a once per turn thing, but the attack is actually resolved at the end of the turn because it will not... attack is resolved, basically given the best range, closest range, and the result of a single die roll for each unit attacked. Results are given in terms of number of crew units that are reduced to mindless vegetables or brains are wiped clean by the attack. If the main unit is not operating its shield at full strength, the attack wipes a number of crew units equal to double the one result of the next lower range. Yikes. So if you're at, let's say, if you're at range, like, let's say 5 per se, that's the closest range, and you have no shields up. You're not at full strength, so you can't be running around at minimum strength shields. Because if you do a minimum strength, what happens? It goes to the next range, which is 4, and then double. So instead of only having one crew unit wiped, it is going to be 4. Or at least possible 5. A possible 1, it's a guaranteed 4. So, i.e., don't do that. Now, I read this one, which was nasty. If the manned unit is at range 0 while operating its shield at less than full, 18 crew units are wiped. The crew units are blanked and restored to the normal state by the medical crew using the records in the transporters after the scenario is over, unless You have a legendary doctor that can heal blank crew units during the course of the scenario. This is the interesting part. Because it says if it's range zero, a main unit is zero and zero, it'll and not so less than full, 18 crooners are marked white. But in the next rule, it says if a monster enters the hex of a ship and the ship will come to a complete stop. The monster has wiped the engine. Oh yeah, this is what it was. Okay. It has wiped the engine crews and navigation computers, and it will remain stopped until the end of the turn that the monster leaves the hex. The monster will remain in the hex for two turns, including the turn it entered the hex, attacking the ship and anything else. On the third turn, the monster will follow any ship that enters the two hex radius. If no ship attracts the monster on the third turn, the monster will resume towards the planet when the scheduled to move on the fourth turn, i.e. do not enter range zero. Which is really, yeah, which is interesting. Actually, no, yeah. So don't, number one, do not. Enter a hex of it with less than full strength, because 18 crew units is a lot of crew units. You know, like I think a CA usually has like 40 crew units. So you know, you're okay, but of course, then you're stopped there, and it will attack you for two turns straight. And I'm looking at their average. The average is going to be like 3.5. You know, crew's zombified, you know, blanked for two turns. So that means it will average like 6 crew units blanked, you know, which overall things are not too bad. Now, obviously, the one thing you always have to remember is the minimum crew units for a scenario like this. Because if you get below that, then things get really difficult. Because this is a standard monster scenario that is, we have to use let me bring it up because I did. Oh, give me a sec here. Let me go here. Because I know it's going to say, it's just give me SM2.5, which is victory conditions, is the one you use for this scenario. And that the monster wins if the starship is destroyed or disengaged. Well, the player wins if it can accumulate 400 points of scientific information, used information that, you know, with chart S6.1. And consult the table to see how you actually destroy the monster. And of course, which is, oh, you might actually have a nice friendly mind monster. Of course, what happens then? If you have it communicate, like, okay, can you tell it, attack that guy over there? You know? Well, actually, that's an interesting... And what an interesting idea in my mind. Okay. Nothing. I'm just looking at Rusty's day. We're talking at the chat room. I'm talking about the monster rules, and there's how Russ actually collected a bunch of the rule books. And actually, he created these PDFs, which are a collection of the rules necessary to play a certain monster, which is great. You know, not like the thing is, I do have these rules that he gave me a copy, so I can show it to you guys and I can get ahead of it. And I thank Russ profoundly for that, because it definitely saves me some time and some effort. Now, obviously the number one thing here is going to be, it's critical, is going to be not getting below the amount of minimum crew. Also, the planet, in the case of this scenario, the planet houses a special library slash university of 25 memory banks and 50 crew units. If the monster enters the hex of the planet, it will attack the memory banks and crew units separately on the range zero column. The library has shields. And the ship cannot enter the hex of the planet. So basically, if the mind monster ever reaches the planet, you will not be able to distract him. He's just going to be there attacking. So at that point, let me look at this for a moment. Right. Okay. For each crew unit remaining on the planet are 2 points for each memory bank. So, unlike some other scenarios, well, it says remaining on the planet. So, in theory, I would think that you could actually, that's one thing I didn't see anything mentioned of, which is the case of, I'm assuming. It doesn't say anything. My assumption is it says that if the shields aren't operating full strength, which my assumption here is that if you drop your shield, one of your shields, you're not operating your shield at full strength. And therefore, given that, it will use the doubling, and going to the next further in range. Or that would be my guess. I don't see anything. I'm not sure when it comes to that.
You see the full strength and just have them down, have one or two down.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Power to block.
Right. That's one thing first thing I have to do is go check the discussion board on that question.
And by full strength, do they mean your shields are at full, or do they just mean you have them fully powered? Some of the monster scenarios, if you want to really nitpick and don't need shields, you just don't pay for them and you use that power for extra speed or something. I mean, it's kind of a radical thought. Maybe that's what he was thinking when he wrote it.
Mm-hmm. Understood. But yeah, it doesn't say, it just says if the man unit is not operating its shield at full strength, that's all it says.
Yeah, that's probably mean like you're paying for full shield strength.
Right. Well, the first way I would read that is that you have to have your shield up to full strength, and that you can't use minimum shields, to save power. So you can't do that. So you have to have full strength shields up, working. I'm not sure if turning off one shield is considered dropping a shield. I mean, going below full strength.
For purposes of what you're paying in power to keep the other five up, probably not. Maybe having a down shield towards it counts as having no shields at all.
Yeah, tactics, that says, big surprise. The tactic that says, avoid crew casualties while investigating the monster. Oh, shocker. Though, it gets a little more, You can do it. It's just that it's going to be slow as hell. Because you have to get, you can get into range 4 and you have a good chance of not taking crew unit damage, but you can't say that for certain. The only way you can say that for certain is to stay outside of range 5 of the monster. If necessary, induce it to follow you so that it won't attack the library. Although you temporarily must spend crew units to do this, use your shuttles for labs, but keep one of for use as a suicide shuttle, as we just previously mentioned, and use your command option points to purchase a probe drones, assuming that you have drone racks or an MRS shuttle if allowed. So big surprise there. So it said, you know, it said basically avoid losing crew units as much as possible while you're collecting the information, which you have to collect up to 400 points of information. And obviously the closer in that you get, the more you have. And as it points out, you know, a probe drone would be wonderful to get. You know, if you have drone racks, you know, because here's always the difficult part about these scenarios. I'm trying to be realistic, i.e., do you have
That's a big problem with it. S&P has had since day one. It's an abstracted game, and if you try to go over realistic on it, you'll drive yourself nuts. I mean, we've had this discussion on this show before about, like, how, you know, people wanting to modify the rules or reinterpret them and say, oh, but in the real world physics, X, Y, Z equals Z, you know,
right,
versus the abstracted game thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I understood.
And there are points where you can actually try to read too much into rules for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the point I'm trying to get across basically is that with some of these monster scenarios, how much lead time do you have? Meaning that, obviously, to get probe drones, in my mind, you have to be at the very least at a base. If you don't normally carry on pro drums in your cargo, in your hole, you know, then it means you have to especially outfit for that mission. And to be especially out for that mission, you have to have it's not like, oh, you know, you're doing a patrol, a normal patrol for enemy units, for the Klingon, in the case of Fed, you know, the Klingons coming across the border or something like that. And then you find out there's a monster nearby. They're about to attack this planet.
The thing is, it's an abstracted game. These guys are on patrol on a big boat that probably has all sorts of stuff in it. They've got replicators on their ship. They can rebuild anything they want to at any time. And we're talking about scenarios where the real time is seconds, not like an hour-long episode of a show, but literally several turns or maybe several seconds of time. And I think what it's coming down to is too, like, yeah, my character might have that in his backpack versus did you write that down before you left town is where you're doing it. You're over-detailing it. You know, I mean, does he have this thing? Does he have to go all the way back to base to get an extra set of probes or something when maybe give the guys who do this stuff for a living, went through the academy, and are packing their ship to go out there for 6 months credit that maybe there's a crate somewhere where they've got these things stacked away in their quartermaster's area and they get the distress call saying, hey, a couple minutes from now, you'll be over there unpack. And you just say, okay, we'll go unpack these couple crates real quick. And then you have them for the scenario. I mean, it's a ridiculous amount of detailing that you're kind of heading toward for the scale of the game. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when the Enterprise, the real Enterprise, goes out to sea for 6 months, they have all kinds of crap on that boat. They don't necessarily have everything, but they don't need to go back to Hawaii or Quebec or wherever they're stationed out of on a given tour to get, you know, a replacement fighter. You know, they've got one or two or three that are all packaged up in crates, stuffed away in a corner of their hangar that doesn't necessarily show up on their SSD, so to speak. If they need some special software, there's a pretty good chance that their IT guys have it on a disk somewhere and they don't have to, you know, go to Best Buy to get it. So, yeah, and I mean, in between scenarios, there can be a long amount of real time. And, you know, if you're doing a campaign game and you want to go to that level of detail, you can burden your players with it, but I don't see a real need to.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
There's my two cents. By the way, Gamers is next weekend. We'll get that plug in.
Yep, because actually we're going to time to wrap it up for the evening. It's getting at that time of the night.
Oh, hey, do you mind if I do a plug real quick, Paul?
My what?
Well, Gamers is next weekend. Sometime tonight or tomorrow morning, I'm going to shut down the online registration part. People can still get badges at the door if they want.
But okay.
Theoretically, if you buy your badge tonight or before I shut it down in the morning.
Right. So, yeah. So, if you want to pre-reg for Gamers of Winter, do it now. Do it tonight if you're listening to it live. And obviously, if you're not listening to it live, hopefully you'll listen to it by tomorrow. And tomorrow being Friday. And because that sometime tomorrow, Doug's going to be pull it all down so that you will no longer be able to do a pre-registration. Obviously, we appreciate you doing pre-registration instead of registering there, because then Doug has the money to do things beforehand instead of praying that he gets enough money afterwards to pay for things.
It helps a lot.
Yes, it helps.
It helps you organize more at the door when we have a bunch of people wanting in. So, you know, have a pre-registration line. You've had your page for it. We have your badge. Here's your badge. And they say, John. Versus, hi, what's your name? I need to write your name down on your badge. May I have your money, please? Oh, we don't have the ATM right here. It's around the corner. Blah, blah, blah. Come back to
you. Right. Can you?
Yeah. So, there you go. Does make things feel smoother. And, you know, also, Paul's going to be running the Frigate game Saturday and Sunday of the 3-day weekend. We'll also have Monday. Anybody wants to use any of the tables for SFP or anything else for that matter? There you go.
Yep. Okay.
Hey, thank you, Paul.
Okay, you're welcome. Doug, have a good night. So, went through another couple of the monsters. Kind of an interesting monster. We got the Mind Monster and also the Sun Snake. Sun Snake is nothing but definitely something scary. And as pointed out by Russ, they're not affected by EW. Which means that, you know, you can easily get the 3 points of damage if you're not careful. And your ship could die quite easily. So be careful out there. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.